You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. This is a reading of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled The Connection Between the Living and the Dead, Collected Works, Volume 168, translated by Aria Jackson. This is the last lecture in the collection, Lecture 8, entitled The Relationship of Human Beings to the Spiritual World, given in Zurich on December 3rd, 1916. From the public lecture yesterday, you could see how the spiritual world, where we exist between death and rebirth, and the physical world are intertwined. How the spiritual world and physical world also fundamentally intertwine in our so-called physical life between birth and death. We ourselves give direction, so to speak, to the manner in which we are born with such and such characteristics, by having a relationship between death and rebirth to what happens here in the physical world, that is, with the hereditary stream that finally leads to our birth. We examined evolution in a rather outward way yesterday. Now we can examine it in a more inner way, by attempting to bring before our soul the relationship of the human being to the spiritual world from another viewpoint. We live here in the physical world between birth and death. We are familiar with this physical world through our sense perceptions. Indeed, this is trivial. One hardly need say it. If we did not have our sense organs, we would not be aware of our relationship to the physical world. But everything of the relationship to the physical world that is conveyed to us through our sense organs, of course, breaks away from us when we go through death's gate. We can say that gaining knowledge of the physical world is our task between birth and death. We are integrated into this physical body in order to gain knowledge of the physical world. Now, we are not members of the physical world only. Rather, we are members of spiritual worlds as well. The closest spiritual world which borders our physical world, so to speak, is the one that we have become accustomed to calling the etheric world, or also the elemental world. Whether or not this expression is appropriate is not so important here. This elemental world is initially unknown to people because we are living in the physical world. The elemental world is the first suprasensory world, but that fact does not make it less meaningful for us than the physical world, the sensory world. As soon as a sense for this elemental world arises in people, which happens when they are able to perceive imaginatively, it is clear to them that this elemental world is just as richly populated with beings as is the physical world. Human beings themselves, because they have an etheric body, are part of the elemental world. The relationships in the elemental world are only somewhat different than the relationships in the physical world. First, I would like to comment on the fact that perception in the elemental world can take place only when human beings are able to free themselves completely from what makes them earthly humans. This disengagement from what makes a human being an earthly being is, generally speaking, not difficult. However, it is more difficult for human beings today than it was in prehistoric times. We all know of prehistoric atavistic clairvoyance. This was primarily so because humans could free themselves from what made them earthly humans. As earthly humans, we are composed of only a very small amount of solid matter. We are made primarily of fluid. In the moment when we can emancipate ourselves from what is solid in us, when we can just feel into the part of ourselves that is fluid, the imaginative aspect can begin to surface. Existing only in a solid state actually prevents us from knowing through imaginative perception about what is around us as the elemental world. This imaginative perception, which has been lost, will indeed return to humanity. The lost imaginative clairvoyance from the past was of an unconscious, dreamlike nature. What will form more and more in our fifth post-Atlantean period is a fully conscious, imaginative seeing that will incorporate itself into people through completely natural development. I now come back to what I said earlier, that our relationship to the elemental world is different from our relationship to the familiar physical world. I would first of all like to give an example that will substantiate this for you. In the physical world, we form our relationships to various beings, at least seemingly, out of free human choice. We form friendships, we create other relationships to the beings around us. In the elemental world in which we exist through the etheric body, this is not the case in directly the same way. Rather, we are in close connection to certain other elemental beings, more or less through our whole life. Thus, we can really compare our relation as independent elemental beings, which we are because of our etheric body, to a number of other elemental beings, which in fact accompany us through our whole life, to the relationship of the sun to the planets orbiting it. Our own etheric body is a sort of sun elemental being, and it is accompanied by a host of elemental beings which belong to it as the planets do the sun, so that these elemental beings form a sort of sevenness with it, as the planets form a sevenness with the sun, according to the old views. Now, a continuous interplay between our elemental companions and ourselves exists during our entire physical life between birth and death. Not only does our state of health depend on the way in which our elemental or etheric body relates to its, in quotes, satellites, but also our relationship to the outer world, to certain outer beings, namely other human beings. Our health is regulated by the interplay of relationships between these companions and our own etheric body. A kind of medicine will exist in the future that will consider very specifically what I have just addressed. There will be a medical physiological point of view that will determine how one or the other satellite stands in relation to the etheric body, and thereby we will be able to evaluate the state of illness or health. What is called illness today is in truth only the outer physical picture of what is actually there. In reality, in illness, some irregularity is present in what I have compared with a planetary system, and the illness is only a reflection of this irregularity. We could say that those who know such things should begin teaching theories on healing illnesses today. We could say, hic rhodus, hic salta. Quote, prove that what you can do here and now, close quote. And esotericism should show its skill here. Indeed, esotericism will do so the moment its legs are cut free, because one cannot dance if one's legs are bound. And the binding of the legs is the presence of contemporary materialism, which has occupied all of medical science. This cannot be improved by one or the other person performing isolated actions, but it will come about only by a large number of people who, through their common will, are strong enough to bring about such a system of medical practice, one that incorporates spiritual principles. It is particularly important in this respect to recognize that it was not for nothing that Paul spoke his immensely important words, words which were actually never understood correctly because people believe themselves to be Christians when in fact they are not at all. Paul explained that sin came into the world by law, that is, sin is there by law. In a further sense, that which disturbs order is there by law. These things can only be hinted at today, since generally in our materialistic time, whenever something is out of order, people cry out for a law without knowing that precisely what is out of order comes from the laws that are made. But, as I said, this can only be hinted at because much, much more is involved in understanding these things. I said that people only believe that they are Christians. Countless people read such a thing as this from Paul, but it is rarely understood. By virtue of the fact that we are etheric beings, we exist in an elemental world, and a certain system is in close relation to us. This system of the elemental beings, etheric beings, which accompanies us, is also the system of beings that first extricate our etheric body from our physical body when we pass through death's gate. Because of their powers, because they are organized in a certain way, they can then move us into the elemental world. This elemental world, as I have already indicated, can be perceived completely through imaginative knowledge. In this elemental world, there are a number of beings which can be called nature spirits. But also all those are there who recently passed physically through death's gate just a short time ago, as we know, within just a few days. Then what we call the etheric body is given over to the elemental world. It is laid aside like a second corpse. But we must not believe that this second body, which is laid aside there, is quickly destroyed in the elemental world. This is not the case. Rather, the etheric body dissipates, as it were, into the elemental world. But this dissipating, this becoming thinner and thinner, does not mean it is not perceptible to other beings who can perceive imaginatively. Thus, this elemental body, this etheric body, is primarily always perceptible to those who have stepped through the gate of death. The person lays this elemental body aside and now lives between death and rebirth, but remains in connection to this cast-off etheric body. It is not as it is with the physical body, to which a person loses connection when it is laid aside. With the elemental body, the opposite is the case. The person retains the connection, and this connection that the person has to the elemental, to the etheric body, can extend down into the physical world. Now, if a person here in the physical world has made the soul receptive by acquiring imaginative perception of the elemental world, then the soul can also maintain a conscious connection with the dead in imaginations, which of course appear much more subtly than conventional imaginations. This is conscious connection with the dead. However, what becomes conscious was actually always present unconsciously, if there was a relationship between the one who remained behind here in the physical world and the one who has entered the spiritual world. Let us suppose we have lost a beloved person to death. Whether we know it or not, those who develop imaginative perception can know it. The dead affect us when they send their will into the etheric body that was cast off, as into a mirror, and the mirror then sends rays to us. The dead person has an effect, indirectly through the elemental and etheric body, on the living person. This is the effect, which is indirect, so to speak. If I would characterize how this indirect effect is expressed, I would say it is expressed within our ideas that we carry through the world. Indeed, people usually know, especially in our materialistic time, only the ideas that represent outer physical reality to them. But among the ideas that we carry thus through the world, there perpetually exist some that are subtle in a way, some that are not directly perceptible. People simply do not notice them. If we were accustomed to intimately take note of our soul life, and if we did not allow more gross ideas that flow from the physical world to predominate over the more subtle soul life, then we would see that more subtle ideas are in fact always present. And they come from those who had been connected to us, who went through the gate of death before us, and especially those who shortly after they went through death's gate were able to transmit their deeds, actions, and thoughts to us through reflection. Thus, for a time, we carry in our imagination and ideas the being of the dead, due to the fact that in this spiritual world, we as etheric beings belong to the elemental world. If we speak of, in quotes, monism, and wish to be down to earth about it, then we must speak primarily of the monism that I just mentioned, of the unity or union formed from the interaction of the living and the dead. In truth, those who have gone through the gate of death have not left us at all. They are much nearer to us than we think. People develop more and more as they live through the time between death and rebirth, and they can also have a direct effect on the world here. We perceive, after a certain time, as an effect of the dead who have gone on, that their rays of force permeate our soul life. But these rays, this direct effect, cannot settle into our imaginative life, into our thoughts directly. Rather, it settles into our habits, into the way that we are, into the way that we live life here. What affects us from the spiritual worlds, and what comes to us from those who have passed through death's gate before us, stream into those things. Now we must be clear that such interaction of the dead with the living depends on various things. The dead are in an environment where similar beings are present. In other words, soul beings, that is, all entities that belong to the higher hierarchies down to human beings. And because the cast-off etheric body serves as an intermediary, the dead can have perceptions of the people that are veiled from them, in a way, by the physical body, but they penetrate this veil with the help of their etheric body. Those who have gone through death's gate are subject to the conditions under which one lives in the soul world, in the spiritual world. They must comply with them. Now, I need point out only one main point, and you will understand what I mean by this. We know that luciferic and Ahrimanic forces have an effect in the most varied ways throughout the world in which we live. If these luciferic and Ahrimanic forces did not exert their force of attraction on us, then what is expressed in humans as incorrect or evil actions would not exist in the world. The luciferic and Ahrimanic forces must work upon human beings, must give human beings the opportunity to follow them. If we picture this correctly, we will see that the essence of a human being is quite different from what we often make it out to be when we criticize a person. If we had the capability in the physical world always to see how the luciferic and Ahrimanic influences affect people, we would judge them quite differently. Not that we need be less critical, for when we divert our adverse judgment from an individual, we must then confront Lucifer and Ahriman. We would then be much more tolerant of the person as a person. Those who live in the soul life in the period of time between death and rebirth practice this tolerance, both for those beings with them in the spiritual world and for those people who are still embodied here in physical life. It is simply the nature of those who have passed through death's gate to acquire this tolerance and to always see that part of a person has the luciferic or Ahrimanic aspect. The departed do not see a bad person who follows evil desires. Rather, they see that Lucifer is a certain part of the person. They do not see a jealous person. Rather, they see that Ahriman is a certain part of them. That is how those who live between death and birth judge. This tolerance is part of their being, just as it is part of our being to be naturally healthy and have healthy eyes. EYE. Because it is part of the nature of the dead, it is terribly painful for them when they maintain the connection they began in physical life and encounter another way of thinking here in us. Let us suppose that through our personal antipathies, we manifest hatred toward a person who is also in connection with the dead. This hatred represents terrible pain for the dead who try to approach us, as they indeed must because they are still connected to us. This hatred, which is drawn against them like a jagged sword, like a spear, must be overcome by the dead. Thus the way the dead wish to work into us and how they themselves experience this effect depend very, very much on the mood of our soul. They always work into us, but so much of the effect depends on the mood of our soul. These direct influences from the dead play a role, which I have described in our customary ideas borrowed from our surroundings, in our perceptions, in our feeling tendencies, in our temperament, in our habits. but a continuous interplay exists between what transpires in the realm of those who have gone through death's gate and our own souls. If you consider all this, then you will be aware that complicated effects are taking place within what we carry inside us as soul. And much is involved in comprehending all the enigmatic aspects that vibrate through a human soul. So much moves through it that the human soul itself is conscious of little of what pulsates there. But the overall mood of the soul, what we can or cannot do, depends on this. All of this, again, is largely determined by our karma, the fact that we were brought together here, specifically with certain people, who have an effect on us, in the way in which I described, naturally has to do with our karma in a larger sense. As we bring this before our souls, we must be clear that our time, according to what spiritual science should bring people, has actual, real yearnings, but that these real yearnings are still often satisfied in the wrong ways. There are a number of people today who have overcome the prejudice that existed in the middle and last third of the 19th century that everything to do with the soul can be explained only in terms of physical and physiological effects. But half-truths or even partial truths often have much worse effects than complete errors. And one such half or partial truth is the basis for what is variously called today analytical psychology or psychoanalysis. People search, but they search gropingly. They sense that various things are hidden in the depths of the soul, but they cannot resolve to really make strides into the spiritual world in order to find what is hidden there. What do psychoanalysts say today? They say that if they come across such a person as this, the overall state of being depends, in various ways, not only on what is in the consciousness, but also on a whole array of factors that reside in the subconscious, beneath the threshold of consciousness. A person comes along who feels his mood somewhat constricted or repressed. An irregularity in the entire nervous system appears. He must then, according to the psychoanalyst, look into what was experienced perhaps years ago. What, in terms of experiences, was not completely worked through, but instead suppressed in the subconscious. But because it has been forgotten does not mean it is not there. The psychoanalyst senses very well that what has been pushed from consciousness is not thus pushed from reality. It is still down there in the subconscious. Now the psychoanalyst assumes that if the person loosens it up into consciousness by a sort of catharsis, then one gets to what eats away and feeds on it down below. Starting from this point, of course I cannot explain psychoanalysis here in all its ramifications, but I want to indicate some of them. The psychoanalyst now searches for many things in the depths of the soul. Let's say that some years ago, a man had this or that ideal of life, this or that hope or plan, but he did not or could not carry it out. It is no longer in his consciousness because he is living in his present life, but it is not eliminated from the reality of his soul. It goes on gnawing away and consuming him. His whole condition of being depends on what is down there in his subconscious. Perhaps he had an unhappy love affair. This is what psychoanalysts most usually find, of course, because they are on the lookout for it. That is an isolated province of his soul consciousness. He fought it, and it is no longer in his consciousness, but it continues to have an effect. In particular, it continues to have an effect, according to the psychoanalysts, when feelings of love were present and the beloved did not reciprocate, when the feelings remained unfulfilled. Then the psychoanalysts search down in the depths of the soul life, beyond the destroyed springtime hope of life, beyond what I just indicated, the base animalistic mire of life. What perpetually has an effect is the, quote, base animalistic mire, quote, unquote, of life. They search for the correlation with everything in the person that is animalistic, the animal nature, and which contributes to their psychological life. The analytical psychologists, who go farther, say that if one delves down more and more deeply, one finally finds what contributes to races, nations, and so on. One finds what contributes to the soul in a more or less unconscious way. But finally, deep down, one finds the demonic aspect, the absolute undefined aspect that lies beneath the, quote, base animalistic mire, close quote. Such people, who currently are particular followers of psychoanalysis, often quietly insinuate that in these demonic depths below lie the spiritual impulses that lead to gnosis, theosophy, anthroposophy, and such. Though this is sometimes insinuated in a somewhat hidden way, it is still insinuated. Read one of the recent pamphlets from Knowledge and Life, titled Knowledge and Life, and you will be able to find such insinuations here and there, even if they are hidden between the lines. Now, I said that half and quarter truths often have worse effects than complete falsities. There are half and quarter truths in analytical psychology, that is, in searching in the subconscious depths of the soul. But if we compare it to what we indicated today, that all the realities that exist there in the depths of the soul are affected by the realm of the dead, we will be driven to a much different approach. We will not search for the, quote, base animalistic mire, close quote, of the soul, or for the closeted eroticism leading to this or that soul mood. On the contrary, we will often have to seek the underlying cause of an unhappy soul mood in a person who has passed on, for whom we are making difficulties through our own conduct. These difficulties find expression in dissatisfactions of one kind or another surging up into our consciousness. In short, we would do well to bring into our consciousness, in a reverential, sacred way, the correlation that exists not simply between our world and an abstract, pantheistically ambiguous spiritual world, but rather a correlation that exists with the real spiritual world, in which those who have passed through the gate of death are real and are with us as they were in life. But how they affect us goes much closer to our souls than how they affected us in life, when we were always separated from them by our body and theirs, which stood between us like a barrier. Now, let us return to the description I began earlier of the soul's journey into the spiritual world. There comes then, later in this journey, a time in which a person has become fully free from the astral body, has laid aside the astral body completely. Sometime later, the person can have an effect on the physical world from the spiritual world in a much more intensive way as a result of being on a more inward path. Outward life on earth was oriented earlier in many ways toward such instinctively known truths, even if what came about in outward life was often derived from ordinary outward causes. But this outward aspect is the basis of an inner aspect. One often knew this only by instinct. I have said that the dead have a direct connection to the people they are left behind here, and to whom they are particularly connected by love after they pass through the gate of death. The connections are such that they have an effect on habits. At the time when people still felt such things quite instinctively, it was considered that sons should leave the circle of their parental home as little as possible. Then access was easier. Learning the same trade, being part of the same profession, the whole conservative embrace of the same stream of life, these were all instinctive expressions of the fact that it was easier for those who had passed through the gate of death to work into those whom they left behind here, if those left behind lived in circumstances similar to those in which the deceased themselves had lived. Then it was easier for these deceased to find their way to them. Someday we will be able to follow such subtle impulses and causes in the historical evolution of humanity. If a person has been dead for a long while, the astral body has been completely laid aside. This happens only after decades have passed, because the movement that we complete in the spiritual world is much slower than movement in the physical world. 30 years in the spiritual world corresponds to about 1 year in the physical world. We hurry here in the physical world. In the spiritual world, we always have a revolution in a much bigger circle, so to speak, to execute than we do here in the physical world. In short, 1 year in the physical world corresponds to 30 years in the spiritual world. In 30 years in the spiritual world, we experience approximately the same peace of the world as in 1 year in the physical world. Thus we experience that peace of the world in a more inward, intensive way. What people undergo here has much to do with the large world, with the macrocosmos. What is experienced here in the microcosmos within people can also always be expressed in the relationships to the macrocosmos. For example, I would like to bring something to your attention. If we calculate the number of days of an average human life, we get the same number of years that the sun needs to go through the entire Platonic year, the great year. Thus, people live a lifetime of the same number of days that the sun needs in years to move the whole world sphere forward from one sign of the zodiac to the next. When the sun has gone through all the signs of the zodiac, it has taken about 25,900 years and a few years to do it. People live about that number of days in a single life between birth and death. Of course, it is not the same for everyone. And another interesting relationship is that people also take as many breaths in a day as the number of days they live, and as the number of years the sun goes through the whole zodiac. You see, the world is truly ordered in the deepest sense, according to measure and number. And we must believe that this fine integration of humans in the world, this correspondence of harmonies, will lift the crass materialists of our time out of their worldview that chooses to see the universe as nothing but a mechanism. It would indeed be a peculiar mechanism that organizes the individual beings within it in such a wonderful, numerical, harmonically ordered relation to the whole. And it is also very strange that we can really say, if we look at the world in a spiritual way, that people are slowly moving forward as they undergo the evolution between death and rebirth in order to do everything in a more thorough way. That is, they move forward that much more slowly in the spiritual world, in the way that Saturn revolves more slowly around the sun than around Earth. Saturn revolves that much more slowly around the sun than around the Earth, as people move more slowly in the spiritual world than here on the physical Earth. For this reason, not because they knew less than today's astronomers, the ancients calculated Saturn as the farthest planet belonging to the solar system. This is astronomically correct, because the other planets we count as part of the solar system today, Uranus and Neptune, came to it later and affiliated themselves. They also revolve in a much different arrangement, even in a different rotation, than the other planets that belong to our solar system. Now, at least one such spirit year, that is, 30 earth years, must have passed before the soul of the deceased, if a normal age in life of 70 to 80 years is reached, can enter the whole point of view, the whole spiritual life, and not just the habits of those who remain behind here, those who are connected with them or who join with them of their own accord. But the dead also have a very comprehensive and detailed effect in this way in our lives. It is quite true that we carry within ourselves, with regard to the whole way we relate to the spiritual, the impetus of people long dead who work into us. The correlation of the future with the past is affected by this, when such a harmony occurs between the dead and the living. Just as the indirect revelation of the dead through the etheric body, which they lay aside, affects the imaginative perception, so what enters the habits in the way described has an effect on the inspirational perception. And what I just described can have effect only when the dead have gone through one spirit year. It has an effect, if it should become conscious, on the intuitive perception, but it has a perpetual effect. We can find the meaning of evolution most correctly only if we consider such things consciously. Forgive me for bringing in something very personal at this point. You know I don't like to, and thus do not often do so. Those who make the effort now to look at what I started writing decades ago will be able to see that I completely refrained from expressing my own opinion. I did not write my opinion on Goethe. Rather, I attempted to express the thoughts that could come from Goethe. I wrote titled Goethe's Theory of Knowledge, not my theory of knowledge. In such a way, we can join very consciously with beings long dead and can work out of their spirit. That is also what gives us a sort of credential to be permitted to work upon the living. The counterfeit credential many people insist on, especially in our time, is that anyone who has just barely formed a thought immediately turns around and wants to pass it on to countless others, as many followers as possible. Those who know from the spiritual world the conditions of existence, the fundamental laws of existence, know that a person actually, as strange, as paradoxical as it is, may be permitted to have an effect on the depths of the souls of fellow human beings only when the individual has died, and even then only after undergoing one spirit year, that is, 30 earth years. Prodigious gains would be made if the selflessness in the world could gain some further ground, so that those living at a later time would be able to join with the deceased and attempt to maintain the continuity of evolution in a truly conscious way. Whether it is a relationship of free choice or a relationship of another kind caused by karma, the dependence on those who make an effort to send the rays of their influence out from the spiritual world is, when we live it consciously, profoundly significant. I have tried to evoke a feeling in you of the combined effect resulting from interaction between the so-called dead and the living. However, we must realize that the conditions are much different in the spiritual world than they are here. You can find a good portion of these conditions and the conditions of experience in the spiritual world described in the lecture series that I gave some years ago in Vienna. From these things alone, one can only glean some things that are important from one side or the other. It must be said here that something similar, and again something very dissimilar to our physical life, is present in the spiritual world. Before we enter this physical world in the fullest sense, we undergo the embryonic period, in which life conditions are much different than from the moment when we have fully entered the physical world as beings breathing the outside air. In a certain sense, the time we live through in the first spirit year, which has so often been called the Kamaloka period, is similar to the embryonic period. Just as people use another human being, so to speak, in order to be carried into the physical world over 10 lunations, so are they carried into the spiritual world by all their wishes and desires, which hold them together and which they slowly shed. And the consciousness in this first spirit year, 30 years after death, is still somewhat similar to the consciousness here in the physical world, even though the skills and so forth which can be acquired only in the physical world can only be indirectly conveyed by the etheric body. But then other conditions of consciousness set in, a much higher consciousness than the one we are able to have here in the physical body sets in. You can see, if you remember some of what was said in the aforementioned lecture cycle, how this consciousness has a different character in the spiritual world. You must only consider how much consciousness depends on what can come into this consciousness. And when, as ordinary people, we move about here in the physical world, the phenomena of the mineral, plant, and animal kingdoms, and the physical human kingdom, come into us with other soul experiences, cultural experiences, and so on. After death, we are no longer aware of the mineral world as such. we are aware of only the general life in the plant world. You may read in my title, Theosophy, how things are in ascent in the so-called spiritual world. All of this is also linked to a very different experience in the spiritual world. There are really no words for all of this, as you can understand. Our language was basically made for the physical world. Thus, we always have difficulty correctly depicting these different relationships. That is why misunderstanding can arise so easily. Above all, we can express ourselves only in a comparative way. Here in the physical world, you are standing at one point of the whole universe. With your eyes, you look at your surroundings in all directions. It is not that way in the spiritual world. There you are in the surrounding space and look from the surroundings, so to speak, into the inside of a hollow sphere. But this is comparative, as it is not a hollow sphere, because time has a much greater significance than space. So, from the surrounding space, you look at everything. That involves very different conditions of perceiving, very different conditions of looking. And within perceiving itself, there are again very different conditions. Let us imagine that a person passed through the gate of death at 60, 70, 80 years old, or even earlier. Now this person distinctly feels an inner experience. If you feel hunger here in this physical life, you do not say that the hunger is here or there, but rather that the hunger is within you. That is how you feel when you look in from the great surrounding space on some place that you know has something to do with you. Now you must begin making the effort to do away with what is manifest there, what reveals itself. And only when you have done away with it does the true manifestation appear. Thus we can say that as spiritual beings we have an image within us, but this image means nothing at all to us. It must first be done away with, and only when we have done away with it do we find an angel or archangel within us revealed to us. Yes, as paradoxical as it sounds, it is true. We must first work to achieve perception of this being that announces itself behind the image. Thus, understanding the spiritual world is tied to determined exertion, determined work. However, the souls who have stayed behind here in the physical body can more or less manifest themselves to the dead without going through this exertion, when they really form their thoughts about the dead or present something to the dead by reading aloud to them or the like. I only wish to make comprehensible to you, through what I have said, how very different the conditions of perception, of life, of experience are in the spiritual world. And if that is true, then you will not find it surprising that more or less 30 years of spirit time equals 1 year of physical time, because in the spiritual world we stand in the surroundings and look in on the center. And it is very important to hold on to that. You can see how difficult it is to talk about certain spiritual things from the fact that much looks quite the opposite, because we must cloak it in terms suited to physical perception. We are thus readily confronted with misunderstandings. People say, and rightly so, because they first of all see the matter from the physical world, that human beings experience repeated earth lives. That is correct. But why do they experience repeated earth lives? While they live here, between birth and death, they live through a certain period of time. Then they pass through the gate of death into the spiritual world and complete an orbit. But they come back in this orbit to the same point in time. And when we live through a life in the spiritual world, we are actually always at the same world position or place. That is very interesting. In the kingdom of spirit, time does not rule, rather, duration does. We come back to the same place again. In fact, we repeat life in the same relationship to what we have since experienced at the same world place. We always go back to the same starting point. We make actual orbits. You will say that is difficult to imagine. And it is difficult to imagine, and through some of the things I have presented today, which are somewhat easier to imagine, I want to make such a thing as this a part of your meditation in your soul life. Sometimes we must meditate on such things a long, long time if we wish to understand their full scope. I have made it my main task today to describe a bit the way in which the souls who have passed through the gate of death have an effect in the world, if people with whom the departed had been connected in the physical body have remained behind. And you have thus also seen from another perspective that the world is truly a connected whole, that the dead are in truth dead only to outer physical sight. In the instant that they pass through death's gate, they have another kind of access to our souls, and that is the entire difference. They now have an effect on us from within, whereas when they were living, they affected us from the outside. Such things should more and more become not just external theories, but should settle into human consciousness, should become not just a world idea, but rather a world view. Indeed, I mean to say a world perception. Then spiritual science will bear the fruits it should bear, and which it is capable of bearing. One further remark in closing. Consider what it means that human beings during a certain time, between death and rebirth, must carry within themselves the feeling that they carry the hierarchies within themselves as their inner experience. That is true. That could lead people to the most terrible arrogance, which could live in the soul as a dark feeling when they are reborn. In recent times, a barrier to this arrogance was made by the fact that people, more or less, knew that when they passed through death's gate and entered the spiritual world, it was not they themselves who were seeing, but rather the highest beings of the highest hierarchies who were conveying sight to them. But people lost this connection to the spiritual world, just as they lost the old atavistic clairvoyance in the physical world here. It is because of this that what Paul spoke of with the words, quote, "not I, but Christ in me," close quote, and what true spiritual perception achieves with the quotation, quote, "we are born of God, we die in Christ," close quote, must occur. If we learn in the greatest depth from the perception that can come to us from spiritual science that Christ is for earth, we will prepare ourselves in the correct manner for this seeing from the surroundings. And if we experience the gate of death with the correct feelings of, quote, "in Christo morimur," close quote, then looking in from the surroundings, we find our own I-being among those beings whom we see, who are part of the higher hierarchies and are also elemental beings, and also beings embodied here as human souls, or are even disembodied human souls. And we see from the outside the relation of our I-being to the other beings which I have just described. To be able to have these feelings after we have passed through death's gate is incredibly important, because we are able to correctly come to terms with physical embodiment only if we can have these feelings for our own I. We can have them only if we know that they are due to correctly passing through the gate of death with the feeling of, quote, "we have died in Christ," close quote. This being connected with Christ gives us the opportunity to see our relationship in the spiritual world with Christ's spiritual I, E-Y-E, so to speak, to see ourselves as an I-being among other spirit beings, and that I-being is capitalized. With such observations as we made today, I would like to achieve not just the acquisition of a further piece of knowledge, but the transformation of this knowledge into sensing, into feeling. Even if all the ideas put forward today pass through us like mere dreams, and only a basic feeling remains with us, which I have tried to sum up in these concluding words, and leads us correctly into the spiritual world so that we are able to carry it through the physical world in the next earth incarnation, if this feeling remains with us, then we are carrying the correct thing from such observations into the rest of our lives. We also want to be at one with such feelings by considering them to be the most intensely connecting feelings, the close, invisible community of those devoted to anthroposophy. Will gradually bring this into the world, this holding together, this oneness in the perceptions and feelings that are born out of the ideas of spiritual science. The world needs this invisible community of souls that is able to carry into the world the forces of such unity as has been characterized. In this sense, we will be together in the future in the spirit, though we are not together physically for a time. And thus it should be with us always, that our spiritual unity carries our physical unity evermore. The end of Lecture 8, that's the end of this lecture collection, entitled The Connection Between the Living and the Dead by Rudolf Steiner, 8 lectures held in various cities between February 16th and December 3rd, 1916, translated by Aria Jackson.